When Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies first appeared well over a decade ago, few people could have imagined how widespread they'd become. Now, these various forms of digital money are in common use, if not yet universally understood. But where exactly do they come from? Who uses them? And what, for better or worse, might be the long-term consequences? We sent reporter Rory Challens in search of answers.
In the new world of cryptocurrencies, money's got strange. The 13 years since Bitcoin's creation have been a rollercoaster ride. Born from the financial crash as money's liberation from central banks, Bitcoin is a person-to-person electronic cash system.
Think of them like tokens that you buy. Thank you very much. Now, of course, this is just a prop. Cryptocurrencies are purely digital, and we access them in a digital wallet. We can send them anywhere in the world in a flash.
If a business accepts it,
you can buy goods and services. Do you accept Bitcoin?
It's built on the blockchain, a decentralized database of transactions that's transparent and secure. But Bitcoin can get pretty wild. Cryptocurrencies have no controller except the market. People have made fortunes and lost them.
Their value can go way, way, way up. Or come crashing down!
But where does it come from? What does it cost the planet? Is it the future of money? Or is it useful as money at all? My name is Rory Challens, and I want to find out. My first destination, Pennsylvania, a US state that has fully embraced crypto. If Bitcoin is going to take over the world, it'll have to conquer America. And it's making good progress. Recent surveys suggest about a fifth of American adults have already bought into crypto. So now that I'm here, I better get some.
Right, this is Chainbytes, and inside is a man who's trying to make buying Bitcoin as easy as possible. Hi, guys.
Hey.
I'm Rory.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thank you very much. So these are your machines?
Yes, they are. You want to use one?
I do, because okay. I don't have any Bitcoin. So what do I do? This is a brave new world for me.
First, just click on the screen, get it started.
Yep.
You're going to buy Bitcoin, and you select how much you want to buy.
So here we go, $10. Yep. Last of the big spenders. Just in there.
Yep.
So that's that.
That's it. And then you can look on your wallet, and you can see you got the Bitcoin.
Okay. Oh, it says it's pending.
Yep, that's it. That means you got it.
Eric Grill has been buying and selling Bitcoin since the early days. Now he runs a company that makes cryptocurrency ATMs.
Bitcoin solves one of the problems that we've faced for years and years and years, which is the government controls money, and you have a central authority controlling money. And so what that means is that people, you know, they just print it, devalue it, and you can't count on anything. Like, I don't know how many dollars they're going to print next year, but I know exactly how many Bitcoins are going to be issued.
So can we call it a currency? Should we call it a currency?
It's the best currency that exists on the planet.
But a currency needs to be spendable, and I'm going to put this to the test. Philly is supposedly one of the most crypto-friendly places in the state. The mayor's talking about the city having its own digital coin. The basketball team is sponsored by Crypto.com. So using my new Bitcoin here should be easy. I check out CoinMap, a website that says it shows every business in the world that takes Bitcoin. For the Philly area, there's a list of only around 20. I pick up the phone and start calling them.
John Space can help you.
Oh, hello there. Good afternoon. Do you accept Bitcoin as payment?
No.
You don't?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Cheers. Bye.
As we move through the list, a similar story.
Not going well. Do you guys accept Bitcoin as payment there?
No, we do not.
No. Did you ever?
We used to years ago.
And then what happened? Why did you stop?
The technology was too hard to maintain regularly, and half the staff isn't sure what Bitcoin really is, so they did not really like using it.
Cheers.
Yeah, no problem.
Best wishes. Bye.
Bitcoin's evangelists may say it's the future of money, but the vast majority of businesses listed as accepting it don't, until...
Do you guys accept Bitcoin as payment?
We do.
You do?
They invited us down for lunch. This is the Some Pig food truck, the home, so they say, of some of the best barbecue sandwiches in town.
What can I get?
So we have brisket, pork and chicken.
Jessica and her partner began accepting Bitcoin in 2015 and say, unlike others, they will continue to do so.
Can I pay with Bitcoin?
Yes, you can.
Yes. Oh, this looks amazing. Thank you very, very much.
A lot of the people that were accepting Bitcoin in the city, they stopped. You know, they saw how the cycle and how it kept fluctuating. And I think it really scared a lot of people away.
But you kept at it.
But we kept at it, yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's just something we believe in. We just believe that crypto is the future.
Do you worry at all about the security of it or whether it's a scam in any way?
I worry more about the dollar than I do Bitcoin. I do believe it's going to be the currency of the world.
But if it is, Bitcoin has a long way to go. Few Americans seem to be spending it. For most, it's just another investment. But where does Bitcoin come from, anyway? I'm heading into the Pennsylvania countryside to find out. When I get there, future finance is a little muddier than I'd imagined.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
you. I'm Rory.
Hi, Rory.
What is that noise?
What you're hearing are Bitcoin miners.
These are Bitcoin miners?
These are the Bitcoin miners. You can see all the little fans in there. There's a little computer on each one of those fans.
Jeff Campbell is the lead engineer at Stronghold Digital Mining. It has 12,000 specialized computer processors.
We're looking for a 256-character-long number. And everybody in the world is working on the same equation. They're all trying to find the same number.
And if you get it?
If you get it, you get 6.25 Bitcoin right now.
And how often do you get it?
Every 10 minutes, somebody in the world finds that number.
This high-tech lottery serves two functions. Miners race to verify the newest transactions made everywhere on the Bitcoin network. The winner is rewarded in Bitcoin. It's an entirely digital process, and it used to be done by amateur enthusiasts on home computers. But these days, it's big business, and the US does more of it than anywhere else.
Worldwide, we're going through more combinations of numbers than there are grains of sand on the Earth.
So you can see it's profitable if you can find that grain of sand.
That's right.
Those profits are pulling in bigger and bigger operators, a 21st century gold rush. But here's the catch. Bitcoin was designed on a system called proof of work. The more processors get thrown at it, the harder the algorithms become. The harder the algorithms become, the more computers are needed. It's an energy-guzzling arms race. And this is how Stronghold's operation gets its power, their own dedicated power station. It burns fossil fuels, coal waste, with all the greenhouse gas emissions that entails. Stronghold CEO Greg Beard takes me into the hissing, roaring heart of the beast.
It seems remarkable to me that all this kind of brute industrial power is just going to make something that you can't even touch. It's a digital currency that kind of floats around in the cryptosphere.
And it's absolutely old world industrial meets new world finance.
But what's the environmental cost of all this? Cambridge University says Bitcoin pumps out as much CO2 per year as a country like the Czech Republic and consumes as much energy as the whole of Thailand. Then Greg tells me something astounding.
When we started the project, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the mining economics, you know, for Bitcoin weren't really enough to support the plant. Thankfully, the state of Pennsylvania, in a bipartisan way, modified the rules a bit to allow us to earn more of what's called a renewable energy credit. And that is that plus higher power prices would support us running today.
So Pennsylvania not only calls coal waste an alternative energy source, it actually subsidizes Stronghold to burn the stuff to make Bitcoin. How can this be? Because of this. the toxic legacy of nearly a century of coal mining. Coal fed the furnaces of Pennsylvania's once mighty steel industry. And this waste, sprawling across the state in vast slag heaps, is the low-quality material left over from the mining. Acid and poisonous heavy metals leach out of them. Bill Spence is Stronghold Digital Mining's chairman.
I feel as if America and the world had a party here, and then we woke up the next morning with the residual garbage left over and are having to clean up after the party.
Like the state of Pennsylvania, he wants these heaps gone. He says he's using the state's alternative energy incentives and the profits from Bitcoin mining to make that happen. But coal is the dirtiest source of power there is, and coal waste is especially inefficient. So I asked Bill the obvious question.
Do you think that the CO2 emissions are a justifiable byproduct of clearing this landscape?
I absolutely do. And what I'm asking you is just stop a minute and look at this. I understand where people say it's not perfect, but how many things in life are perfect? I mean, Rory, don't let perfect be the enemy of very good.
So do you consider yourself an environmentalist?
I absolutely consider myself an environmentalist.
Bill and his colleagues are firmly convinced that they're doing what is best for this area. But I have a feeling people campaigning against climate change are going to disagree.
I'm on my way to meet one at another coal waste power station.
Great big smokestack chimney.
There are plenty of Bitcoin miners who say their operations are green, but most tend to seek out the cheapest energy, whatever its source. This is Russell Zerbo, who works for the Clean Air Council.
The interesting thing about Bitcoin is you could do it in the cleanest way possible, or you can do it in the dirtiest way possible. And as long as there are government subsidies to do it in the dirtiest way possible, people will keep burning coal waste to generate Bitcoin.
We're supposed to be moving towards a net zero future, reducing carbon emissions to nothing by 2050. How does that fit in with Bitcoin and its huge energy consumption?
It does not. The introduction of cryptocurrency and its energy consumption is such a massive step backward for environmental efforts, efforts to confront climate change.
Russell says several states in the US are considering banning Bitcoin mining, but not Pennsylvania. Globally, there's a growing list of countries that have already outlawed it, China being the most significant. One of the other things I've heard about Bitcoin, it's a haven for criminals. Crypto-linked crime surged to record levels in 2021, up 79% from the year before. I want to know what's behind this. Gervis Grigg is a former FBI agent who now works for a company investigating crypto crime.
Criminals are using crypto the very same reason why the vast majority of crypto users use it, for that speed, liquidity, and cross-border nature.
What are the kind of crimes that we see around crypto?
They're doing everything in this virtual asset world that they were doing in the regular fiat world. Particularly scams and frauds make up the largest category of illicit use of crypto.
But you don't think this actually is a problem with crypto itself?
Yeah, there's nothing inherently evil or bad about crypto itself. It's just simply another method for value transfer.
Criminals stole $14 billion in cryptocurrencies last year.
Are we seeing any kind of state involvement in this?
We have seen illicit use of hacking by North Koreans, for example. In fact, they're responsible for hacking over $1 billion in exchange hacks in the past.
But Gervis also says the transparent nature of crypto's blockchain ledger actually gives investigators a treasure trove of data to work with.
So, for example, if there was an illicit transaction where a little old lady was scammed out of her money and she said, and I paid them in Bitcoin, well, then they can look at that transaction and see where that woman's Bitcoin went to. And from there, they can then engage legal process to either freeze that account or seek recovery from that victim. And that's why that's so important.
My next stop is London, one of the world's financial hubs. I want to see what government and central banks think of this brave new world. Easier said than done.
We asked the central banks, both in the United States and here in England, to talk to us, and both of them said no.
Why? Well, many central banks are undecided what to do about a technology designed to break their control of money. I've come to meet Harriet Baldwin, a British Conservative MP, a former investment banker, and a member of the Treasury Select Committee, which examines government economic policy.
Do you think the central bank should be scared of cryptocurrencies?
I think they're all looking at it, and I think it's going to be important to coordinate the approach amongst the developed world central banks. I think, you know, there is also the risk that these currencies could end up being, you know, the tulip bulbs of the 21st century.
By tulip bulbs, you mean it could be a bubble?
People could be buying something for way above the value that someone else will pay in the future to take it off their hands, and they could lose a lot of money in the process and end up with something that they discover is actually just lines of code and doesn't have intrinsic value because no one else will accept it as payment.
Does cryptocurrency development pose a threat to financial stability?
It could be potentially if it becomes a much more significant size in the world financial markets. At the moment, all the evidence we've had on the Treasury Select Committee is that it's still a very small proportion of the world's asset base. And so, therefore, we've been told that it doesn't pose a threat to financial stability at this level.
But what happens when a nation state does jump with both feet into this weird new world?
Welcome to San Salvador, folks. This is the terminating point on our flight.
I've come to a country that's boldly gone where no other has dared and turned itself into a unique fiscal petri dish.
Ah, here's the sign to Bitcoin Beach. Now, this is where the experiment started for El Salvador.
3 years back, a clique of crypto converts began transforming the surf town of El Zonte. They persuaded people to join a local circular economy based on Bitcoin. But all of El Salvador is Bitcoin Beach now. Last summer, the country's president, Nayib Bukele, rushed through a law that elevated Bitcoin to legal tender alongside the US dollar. No other government has taken such a gamble with national finances. I'm interested to hear what the founders of Bitcoin Beach think of it all. Roman Martinez is one of them.
It's beautiful. That dream that started super small, now it's more bigger than El Salvador, and many people around the world are dreaming with our country. And I think our president is visionary. 70% of Salvadorian people were on bank accounts.
And that means they've got no bank account, right?
No bank account. Any kind of financial service. And now, since Bitcoin arrived in our community, we start to see people saving money, people transacting digitally, people receiving and making digital payments, people buying an asset for the first time, people sending money from El Salvador to the USA, from the USA to El Salvador, because Bitcoin is the best monetary network that humanity ever had, you know?
These are big claims. And I want to find out if Bitcoin really has transformed this country. Bitcoin Beach seems the obvious place to start. But at the place I stop for lunch, crypto isn't welcome.
If you're going to pay me with money, because I want to go to the grocery store. I want to go pay my debts. I want to make sure that it's being done.
So do you even consider it to be money?
No.
What is it?
It's a fool's errand.
I ask at several other places too. Some accept it, but plenty don't. The large majority of people in this developing country live on subsistence incomes. How are they responding to such a huge experiment? Jorge Cuella is an assistant professor of Latin American studies at Dartmouth University in the US. He's also a Salvadorian. And Jorge took us round the vibrant working-class street markets of the capital, San Salvador.
I mean, so far, Bitcoin has done very little to change the dynamics of the marketplaces here in San Salvador. You might see a couple of signs that say we accept Bitcoin, but when you actually go up to these stalls and ask people, hey, can you take some Bitcoin? They're like, you know, I'd appreciate if you do dollars.
El Salvador's government sponsored a national digital wallet called Chivo, but early tech glitches put people off. Many checked in to cash out a $30 welcoming sweetener and haven't touched it since. We spot a stall with a Chivo sticker.
¿Acepta Chivo? But she told me that the sticker is there only to abide by the law, that they have to take it if someone shows up.
So what do you think the actual uptake of Bitcoin has been in El Salvador?
In these kinds of environments and in the daily transactions that people do, Bitcoin is not a presence at all.
In March, El Salvador's Chamber of Commerce said 86% of businesses hadn't made any Bitcoin sales.
Who really actually benefits from Bitcoin?
So as Bitcoin is laid out now, most of that, the wealth generation and the wealth distribution goes to about 0.01% of all Bitcoin owners. They're the ones who have about 27% of all Bitcoin worldwide.
So 0.01% of
tiny percent
owns 27% of Bitcoin.
Exactly. And that those are the Bitcoin whales. Those are many of the people who are behind Bitcoin boosterism and the ones who are creating all these different kinds of enterprises and businesses and ventures in places like El Salvador.
And presumably it's in the interests of Bitcoin owners to keep the hype going, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. In El Salvador, bringing people into Bitcoin is part of this process of trying to inflate the value and trying to hit those kind of milestones that many of these elite Bitcoin holders are hoping for.
To me, that doesn't sound too different from a pyramid scheme.
It's exactly a pyramid scheme, multi-level marketing, where you need more people to enter into that space and to order to keep the value up and keep the party going.
When Bitcoin critics say the whole thing's a pyramid scheme, they point to the events laid on by cryptocurrency firms. Events like this, it's called Heels for Bitcoin, and it's hosted by a company called Paxful. Now is a good time to buy in, these Salvadorian women are told. Another Paxful event 3 days later, and the star guest is El Salvador's youngest ever congresswoman. 27-year-old Dania Gonzalez helped pass the Bitcoin law here to make Bitcoin legal tender.
Other countries also want to be like El Salvador, talking about this specific law.
The law has many critics, though, doesn't it? The IMF has recommended that El Salvador drop it because it's just too risky. So why is it still operating?
We're a democratic country. And, I mean, we have our president, our government, our own Congress, and any decision made or comments made for other institutions around the world, I mean, they are people who recommend things, but it doesn't mean that we're going to do those things.
This is El Salvador's tech enthusiast, President Nayib Bukele. How much his Bitcoin experiment has cost hasn't been disclosed, and this secrecy concerns many. The bill could be $400 million, say some economists. And every dip below El Salvador's Bitcoin purchase price hits the country's coffers.
Do you know how much money has been lost?
We're not losing. Actually, this is how Bitcoin works. We're waiting in the future for have more gains about Bitcoin, so it's just a matter of time.
This cuts to the very heart of the Bitcoin question. Many millions of people around the world have bought into Bitcoin, hoping to ride a wave of riches. But they're using it as a speculative investment, and a risky and environmentally damaging one at that. Most people have never used it as money, and it's difficult to see why they ever should. When it's soaring in value, why would you want to spend it? When it's plummeting in value, who would want to receive it?
The thing that makes Bitcoin so attractive to investors, the crazy lurches in value, is the same thing that's holding it back from becoming mainstream currency. It's basically too exciting to be money. Bitcoin needs to be boring, and at the moment, it's anything but.